Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They got it correct, and Sam Adams absolutely nailed it. And this week, I'm following up with you on political psychology, but I am doing a little bit of a twist on that, in that I'm focusing on lost words and meaning. I began my study and follow-up from last week to take you through a November 25th, 1790 letter that Sam wrote to John Adams. But as I was going through that letter, I saw that there were a lot of words in there that the majority of people have no idea what they mean and would have a difficult time understanding them within the context of the letter itself. Some of the words are lost. We do not use them in our vocabulary or any longer. Our vocabulary has shrunk down to just all of the nonsense that we hear out there in the media and on social media, and all the pundits and bloggers and snoggers and doggers that are out there. And the words that are used have such vile meanings in relationship to the words that established liberty that that's why I am calling this political psychology, lost words and meanings. Also, as I was studying and then as I went through and started looking at what was going on this week out there in the world, I looked at the letter to Cousin John, and then I took and was looking at these articles. And there's links to all of this at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. For those watching, it is over my left shoulder. I just went, okay, wait a minute. I spoke to you last week about Noah and the evil that was perpetrated during the time of Noah, from creation to the time of Noah. And I went, oh my, I'm reading these articles. And again, go to the link and follow the references there that I have on those articles. And I can assure you, we are completely morally bankrupt as a nation and the world. And most notably, as a result of those who profess Christ having failed for at least a century in fighting for what is now lost words and meanings. So I wanted to take you through some of this. I wanted to take and discuss with you some of these definitions of terms. And I may, amazingly, I may have the time to actually get into the letter to Cousin John and bring forth to you what Sam was talking about and looking at his psychology over the history of his life. There's not a lot of modern writers look at that, but let's bring it to the facts first. I've looked at most of the books written in modern times on Sam Adams. Good stuff for the most part. Good stuff. The most recent book that some young lady wrote, I think, has a lot of interesting merit to it, and does briefly mention about Sam's grounding as a what? As a Christian, as the last Puritan. She does mention that briefly. But that's the whole essence of his psychology. You know, if somebody would take and be able to go and wrap Kuyperian thought back into that 1800s, you know, Sam Adams would probably fit well within that. What's the structure of work? What does it mean in relationship to politics? What does it mean in relationship to education? What does it mean for Christ in relationship to every aspect of a person's life? And then how do you live it out? How do you live it? How do you implement that into every aspect of society, of labor, of politics? How do you bring that to the essence of liberty? Well, Sam goes through, and we'll go through some of the definitions. We're going to talk about that. But the way I wanted to open the program is with a article that Sam wrote in 1772. I want to take you through just the excerpts on that. And let me zip on down here. It's very simple in this article, and I have to read it to you slowly with proper punctuation. Is it not high time for the people of this country explicitly to declare whether they will be freemen or slaves? I think that's a very appropriate question for right now. Explicitly declare whether you will be a free man or a slave. It is important, or better yet, it is an important question, which ought to be decided. It concerns us more than anything in this life. The salvation of our souls is interested in the event. For wherever tyranny is established, immorality of every kind comes in like a torrent. It is the interest of tyrants to reduce the people to ignorance and vice, for they cannot live in a country where virtue and knowledge prevail. The religion and public liberty of the people are intimately connected. Their interests are interwoven. They cannot subsist separately, and therefore, they rise and fall together. For this reason, it is always observable that those who are combined to destroy the people's liberties practice every art to poison their morals. How greatly then does it concern us at all events to put a stop to the progress of tyranny? It has advanced already by far too many strides. We are this moment upon a precipice. The next step may be fatal to us. Let us then act as wise men. Calmly look around us and consider what is best to be done. Let us converse together upon this most interesting subject and open our minds freely to each other. Let it be the topic of conversation in every social club. Let every town assemble. Let every associations and combinations be everywhere set up to consult and recover our just rights. In a poem that he quotes, the country claims our active aid, that let us roam, and where we find a spark, our public virtue blown into flame. Ladies and gentlemen, this is so appropriate for our present time. We are at that precipice. We are at that place where we know that every attack on our liberties is being done through what? Ignorance, not truth, the teaching of CRT, the teaching of white hate, the teaching of false identities of our founding fathers, the destruction of our history, the destruction of fundamental knowledge at universities. All of that, and incorporating vice, as he states here very clearly, is that wherever tyranny is established, immorality of every kind comes in like a torrent. I don't know where you live, but we've had some pretty significant rainstorms in between the snowstorms and now finally starting back into some decent weather here in Northeast Ohio. But look around. Go look at these news articles. I just have to take you down to just the headlines real quick in this. All Arise, How Judges Rule America. That is against the Constitution. Go check out that article. Haiti. Vigilante mobs go on another lynching spree, incinerating alleged gangsters. That article goes back to the days of people having tires put around them and lit on fire with gasoline in the tire. But the gangs, because of a evil prime minister there, the gangs are controlling the country. And finally, the people are fed up. They're fed up. And although they're fundamentally unarmed, they are taking and using sticks, stones, pitchforks, every type of instrument they can, and attacking the gangs and killing them. The police are letting the vigilantes do that because the police have been attacked by the gangs. What do we got going on? What are we going to have when Title 42, there's already a caravan of buses coming up from Costa Rica to invade America? We have been under an invasion for the whole time that the Biden administration has been in office. And now they're expecting over 1 million people to flood the border when Title 42 takes and is lifted. There's the article. Title 42 countdown. Migrants fly from around the world to rush the U.S. border, let alone the bus caravan. Here's another one. Breaking. GOP Senator Grassley and Oversight Chair Comer subpoena Chris Wray and FBI to produce damning unclassified records showing criminal scheme between Joe Biden and foreign nationals. I know you've seen that all over, but when I saw that, I'm going back to how I opened the program. We are being led by evil and tyranny to the extent that they are creating levels of immorality. New York becomes the first state to pass legislation banning the use of natural gas for heating and cooking. Oh, don't worry about that. We're not going to ban stoves. No, but they did. Companies try to train children to eat bugs in Switzerland. That's Bill Gates wanting to do that here. Here's another one just in. This one is attacking our property rights. Owner of a Michigan horse farm who refused to sell property to the CCP Tide battery plant is notified she is under investigation by governor agency tied to the dirty Democratic AG Dana Nessel. And there's several others, but an important one here that I would highly recommend you go read is the one here on understanding the political religion of woke. I've been talking about what? Political theology for quite some time now. Very, very good article on that. Sam Adams had this clear perspective of his day, or is it our day? Tyranny rules, evil rules. But we have to be wise. We have to come together and converse how to deal with this. We have to deal with it and make the strong efforts like Sam Adams. So come on back for the next segment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. This is Tom Navolas, your host, and I did forget to introduce myself in the first segment there, but you know who I am, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And what I want to do is in talking about the definitions of the various words that are relative to Sam's letter to Cousin John, is reclaim the lost words. I want you to take and be able to understand the foundational truths and definitions of the words. So we're going to take the time to do that in this segment, and then I'll probably get to some of Sam's letter in the third segment. If not, I'll be talking about some other quotes or aspects about Sam relative to how his political psychology was formulated. But what I want to remind you of, if you did not listen to last week's program, is the fundamental definition, the founder's definition and understanding of psychology. And that is clearly psychology as a noun, is a discourse or treatise on the human soul, or the doctrine of the nature and properties of the soul. I started to look that up a little bit more and go to where would Sam have an understanding of that definition? How would he look at that and apply it? Because in a number of his writings, he uses soul. He uses the whole concept of that definition in context. Not only that, in those that wrote about him, like his nephew, in writing about the life and public service of Sam Adams in Volume 1 alone, which I will be quoting from and is in your notes at samueladamsreturns.net, is that Sam engages his whole soul into the fight for liberty. His whole soul. And what I want to do is jump real quick back to that definition of soul. And then we're going to go back to where is that from? What is the understanding of that? So here's the definition that the founders understood in soul. And this is in the letter about that. So the definition is a noun, which is the spiritual, rational, and immortal substance in man, which distinguishes him from brutes, that part of man which enables him to think and reason, and which renders him a subject of moral government. The immortality of the soul is a fundamental article of the Christian system. Such is the nature of the human soul that it must have a God, an object of supreme affection. And that's why last week I said, who is your God? Because that's where your soul, that means that's where all of your spiritual, rational, your very substance will gravitate to. What is it? Who is your God? And quite frankly, that immortality that your soul has, if your God is not the God of the Bible, and your soul is not redeemed by Jesus Christ, then the immortality of your soul will be spent with, sadly, your God. So understanding that the spiritual, rational, and the immortal substance of man is what Sam Adams understood in relationship to using soul in his writings or using soul as he is written about goes back to that. Where did he get that from? I'm not going to belabor it because I want to get to these other definitions. But where he got it from is because Sam, being a Puritan-minded individual, was a Calvinist. And he understood Calvin's institutes. He studied. Remember, he was going to be a pastor. He studied initially to be a preacher until he began understanding that transition in from God's essence of government into the whole government and political realm of mankind. So in Calvin's Institutes of Religion, in the first section, the chapter 15, in the 3-8 sections there, Calvin goes into the depth and truths of the soul, of the human soul. And what does that mean? Even from a psychological perspective on how we relate in everything that we do from that perspective in needing God as that savior of our soul. We gravitate. That's part of what God puts in man that was breathed into us, is that need and desire for, hopefully, the God of the Bible is where you're at. If not, then it is the God that you create. So as I mentioned before, and I mentioned last week, is that in this, that truth and virtually everything about the soul, about the rationalization, about the thinking, as we're seeing in even those news articles that I brought out, are destroyed by humanism, Marxism, and in particular, modern psychology. So with that, what I want to do is go through some of the etymology of foundational vocabulary. Etymology of our lost words are forgotten or bastardized by moderns. So with that, I want to go through just initiating you with several of the words that are there and their definitions, and take into consideration this as we go through it. What is the psychology as defined there, psychology being what? That of the human soul, the doctrine of the human soul, and what does that mean then as we look at life and political life in general? So there, the first definition we're coming to is political. What is it? It's an adjective pertaining to policy or to civil government and its administration. Political measures or affairs are measures that respect the government of a nation or a state. So we say political power or authority, political wisdom, a political scheme, political opinions. So a prince, a good prince, is the political father of his people. So the founders of a state and a wise senators are also called political fathers. And it pertains to a nation or a state, or to nations or states as distinguished from civil or municipal, as in the phrase political and civil rights. The former comprehending rights that belong to a nation or perhaps to a citizen as an individual of a nation. The latter comprehending the local rights of a corporation or any member of it. Right there, that alone is a study in itself when everybody talks about their civil rights. Where do those civil pertain to? And there he lays it out. And this, again, is from Webster's 1828 dictionary. And then what are individual rights? Where does that apply individually? And then what does apply to a corporation or a member of that corporation? Very interesting. Sovereign. Absolutely, we need to go through sovereign because that's what Sam writes about also to John. Sovereignty is, here's just a partial listing of those definitions. Listen close again, is that we retain this barbarous ontology from the Norman sovereign. The true spelling would be suveran, from the Latin superness or superus. So it means from all of that, supreme in power, possessing supreme dominion as a sovereign ruler of the universe. You understand how these definitions always pertain to some aspect of biblical Christianity? Supreme, superior to all others, chief. God is the sovereign good of all who love and obey him. Supremely efficacious, superior to all others, predominant, effectual, a sovereign remedy. Sovereign as a noun, a supreme lord or ruler, one who possesses the highest authority without control. Some earthly princes and kings and emperors are sovereigns of their domain. Third, which is way messed up in our modern time, has been bastardized completely in our modern time, is welfare. It's a noun, well and fair, a good faring. So here's one of the first definition. Exemption from misfortune, sickness, calamity, or evil, the enjoyment of health, and the common blessing of life, prosperity, happiness applied to persons. Exemption from any unusual evil or calamity, the enjoyment of peace and prosperity, or the ordinary blessings of society and civil government applied to the states. I have a link that is here for everybody to follow that goes on to the next set of definitions, which I want to drop down to and complete here some in this next segment. So the next after welfare is doctrine, because that's important when we look at the doctrine of the soul. And that definition is, in general, it's a noun, it's Latin, and means to teach. In a general sense, whatever is taught is what doctrine is. Hence, a principle or a position in any science, whatever is laid down as true by an instructor or master. The doctrines of the gospel are the principles or truths taught by Christ and his apostles. The doctrines of Plato are the principles which he taught. Hence, a doctrine may be true or false. It may be a mere tenet or an opinion. The act of teaching. He taught them many things by parables and said to them in his doctrine. That's from Mark chapter 4, verse 2. Learning knowledge. Whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Isaiah 28, 9. The truths of the gospel in general. Nature is a noun. In general sense, whatever is made or produced, a word that comprehends all the works of God, the universe. Of a phoenix we say there is no such thing in nature. And look through nature up to nature's God. In the last minute here, by the metonym of the effect for the cause. Nature is used for the agent, creator, author, producer of things, or for the powers that produce them. By the expression, trees and fossils are produced by nature. We mean they are formed and produced by certain inherent powers in matter, or we meant that they are produced by God. So it's the essence, the essential qualities or attributes of a thing which constitute it what it is. It has a nature. Impulse, that is to force communicate the effect of one body acting on another. Influence, acting of the mind to motivate. Passion, we're going to talk about passion in this. The impressions or effect of an external agent upon a body. The feeling of the mind or the sensible effect of impressions. Prejudice, we see a lot of that. It's a prejudgment. and we need to understand it. Go to the definitions and read the definitions as I have them. So when we come back in the next segment, we are going to get into some about Sam and his soul, and then we're going to get into a little bit on the introduction to the letter between Sam and John when Samuel Adams returns and the Anti-Federalists got it right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this last segment of Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalists got it absolutely correct. And this is Tom Navolis, your host. I don't remember introducing myself in the first segment, so I apologize for that. I did decide that I gave you enough of the fundamental definitions of words that you should be able now to take in what I want to bring forward in this letter from Sam to his cousin John. Now, you have to understand that the timing of this letter is in 1790. Now, Sam's a really old guy at this point in time, and you can look at the website to figure out how old he'd be on your own. But the important part of this is that as he was writing this, it came to a point of understanding. These were sentiments. And in sentiments, there is that psychology around all of that, the values, the emotion that goes into it, and observations that are also a part of that, that express then the ideas of influence, and at the same time have to reach our, not just our intellect, but our reason. And our reason, as we looked and we understand the definition of the soul, is that part, that reason, that intellect, that knowledge, and our immortality. So as I go through this letter, I want you to pick some of it out. I may take the time to jump in and bring out some of these key points. In fact, I will. You know, I'm not going to leave something like this alone. So I don't know how far we'll get. We may get through maybe 2-3 paragraphs at most. So at this point, I'll just quit giving you the introduction. But I want to make sure that you understand and that we hit upon those terms. I want to hit those terms as much as possible that are the lost terms and the lost meanings of those various words. So as he moves through, the first paragraph is just an introduction, and then he states in that first paragraph, the sentiment and observations contained in it demanded his attention. And that was a letter that he received from John. So this is where Sam goes. A republic, you tell me, is a government in which, quote, the people have an essential share in the sovereignty, end quote. It is not the whole sovereignty, my friend, essentially in the people? So right there, it is that, what are you understanding? What are you reasoning? What is it that touches us as a people in relationship to sovereignty alone? A republic, what is that? The republic, the coming together of all these various states in a relationship that is now the Constitution of the United States. And John is telling Sam that a republic is a government in which the people have an essential share in the sovereignty. You see that? Wait a minute. This is a position that the Federalists were taking in so many different ways. And where John gets it all mixed up, and Sam's going, whoa, time out. Is not the whole sovereignty essentially in the people? Are you hearing that? It's opposite of what John is saying, opposite of what we have today. Remember, today, As warned, the federal government believes it's sovereign. The states believe they're sovereign. Government believes they are the sovereigns. Bureaucrats believe they are the sovereigns. No, Sam says quite the opposite. The whole sovereignty is essentially in the people, and he poses it as a question. Is not government designed for the welfare and happiness of the people? Go back to the definitions to understand what welfare is. Welfare is not what we see in our welfare state now. Welfare is quite different. Go back to the second segment where I give you that definition, or go to SamuelAdamsReturns.net and get all the definitions that are relative to the words here. Because quite frankly, most people do not understand. And again, welfare has been bastardized by modern thinkers and educators and politicians. And is it not the uncontrollable essential right of the people to amend and alter or annul their constitution and frame a new one whenever they shall think it will better promote their own welfare and happiness to do it? Well, right now you have these people out there screaming about an Article 5 convention, but it's not about this. It's not about the crux of how we should amend the Constitution based on the definition, the founder's definition and understanding of a welfare and happiness. No. It's about how to change just the essence of government, and it's a mess. I'm against the Article 5 convention nonsense. But here Sam's bringing that. What's that framework? You can do that. Now, and this is just the first paragraph, folks. And this is where you're looking at that rationalization, the thinking, the soul of the matter. How are you understanding it? Where is the perspective when we look at all of what? A man's soul and what that means, his rational understanding of the very essence of how you're living in your immortality. Because from the moment you are born, the moment you are conceived, you have been gifted to live in immortality from your conception, And in that, you have to understand then how is it within good government that welfare and happiness should be. Sam goes on, that the sovereignty resides in the people is a political doctrine which I have never heard an American politician seriously deny until the 21st century. No, until the 20th century. Because in the, early 1900s, government denied and has denied ever since that the sovereignty resides in the people. Except when we had Reagan for a while and Trump, but government. Anyway, let's continue. That's important. Up until that point, the sovereignty resides in the people is a political doctrine. And remember, I went through that definition of what is doctrine. The Constitution of, and this, let me pluralize that, the constitutions of the American states reserve to the people the exercise of the rights of sovereignty. And it's done by annual or biennial elections of the governors, senators, and representatives, and by empowering their own representatives to impeach the greatest offices of the state before the senators, who are also chosen by themselves. Now, this was at the state level, and that impeachment should be there and be used appropriately. Now, we're moving on to the next paragraph, paragraph literally three. And we have 5 minutes left. He goes on to say this regarding the federal constitution. We the people is the style of the federal constitution. Now, I say the style of it because you have to understand when the federal constitution was first proposed with, before it went to the committee on style, it was we the state of, we the state, or the state of, the state of, the state of. It was all about the states coming together in that federal republic form. It was the Committee on Style that changed it to we the people. So Sam appropriately brings that to the forefront, that the style of the federal constitution. They adopted it. Now, the people did, by convention, through their states, did adopt it. Conformably to it, they delegate the exercise of the powers of government to particular persons who, after short intervals, resign their powers to the people. And they will reelect them or appoint others as they think fit. And this is the part of elections that has been lost in the definition and understanding of a constitutional republic and the powers of the people, is that those elected to office resign at each election period. You know, maybe that's what we should make sure, is that they resign before they take the oath of office again. That's not clear, but Sam makes it clear that's how it's supposed to function and operate, and that people can change their elected persons. So let's go on. And we do have a few more minutes to move into the next. So are you seeing this? Are you seeing that it is soul felt, that it is a mechanism of back and forth in the how do you present that psychology? You know, John was just coming flat out and saying the sovereignty is in the government and the people get to share in it. And on that opposite positioning is a move to reach the soul, the psychology of the person, and saying, whoa, wait a minute, think about this. No, it is the people that are the sovereigns who have adopted a mechanism for governance. And there are certain aspects to it, clear aspects to it. Now, the American legislatures are nicely balanced. They consist of two branches, each having a check upon the determination of the other. They sit in different chambers and probably often reason differently in their respective chambers on the same question. If they disagree in their decisions, by a conference, their reasons and arguments are mutually communicated to each other. Candid explanations tend to bring them to agreement, and then according to, especially the Massachusetts Constitution, the matter is laid before the first magistrate for his revision. That happens. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't even have time to finish this, but let me put it this way to you, in just focusing back on the, especially that second paragraph, if you will. The words lost, the essence of this that's lost is what is a republic? Who are the sovereigns, the sovereignty of the people? Where does government reside? What is it for? What is that real meanings of welfare and happiness? Who controls the rights? What rights do the people have? And we have the right to alter our government. So when we look at all these definitions, and again, go to samueladamsreturns.net to find out about that, we have to take and understand now is the time, as I open this, go back and read for yourself those words that Sam said, that we have to come together, then we have to resist the tyranny which is instituting evil. We need to learn how to speak in wisdom, and we need to come together in wisdom and determine the course of changing those that are in office and the bureaucrats by the mechanisms we have under the Constitution of the state as well as the federal to impeach those that are perpetrating evil on us. Come on back next week.